Hello and welcome, Ducks fans. Where and whenever you are watching or listening, this is the Once a Duck podcast, where we bring you up to date with current and former University of Oregon athletes and give you never before heard stories about your favorite teams and moments in Duck history. Now, we were off last week because of Christmas break, and we're here again, but we've got a lot to talk about because the Ducks are back to back Pac-12 champion. Sam, how have you been doing, my man? How did you celebrate the holidays?
Well, you know what, Nick? It always feels good to be a Pac-12 champion. Right now, I'm looking at the Pac-12 championship hat that is hanging across the room for me. I am so excited to yet again be able to say the Ducks stand atop the Pac-12. Man, it is fun to be back in this position. As for the holidays, man, they were nice. It was a good time to be able just to relax a little bit, kick back. Of course, not able to see all the family we want to during this this challenging time, but you know what? It was still a good time. Got this Oregon hoodie I'm wearing right now. So you know what? Everything's all good. The Ducks are in a New Year's Six bowl game. I'm just excited to be here to talk about it.
Yeah. And you know, coming off that last episode we did, we go into that USC game a little bit hesitant, coming off two Ducks losses, but wow, did the defense come out and perform? I can't believe it. What a great game. I remember you texted me a little bit nervously before the game being, Nick, I don't know. I'm a little nervous. I don't know if Oregon's seen a passing attack like this. And I thought, Sam, don't be killing my vibes. This is going to be a great day to be a Duck, just like every day is. And it was, man. What an awesome day. But we got many more ahead. You know, we just wrapped up 2020, a very difficult year, but still a great year to be a Duck, man. Even with everything canceled, I think, you know, we have some Pac-12 championships to celebrate, some things to talk about moving forward. But first, I think from friends of the show and family, we've got some gifts to talk about. First, Sam, over my shoulder, what do you see there that we have to replace our old swear jar?
Well, I see a brand spanking new shiny swear jar. That is for all of our misdiscretions, all of our slips of the tongue, everything that comes out that's not quite supposed to. That's what that's for.
Yeah, absolutely. And we asked all our fans out there on Twitter, if you're not following us already, at Once a Duck, or me at Just Follow 6-1, Sam at Samuel 101 TS, you need to already. But we've asked you guys going into 2021, what should we have in our new Once a Duck swear jar? And besides the civil, the CW word, platypus cup, what else do our fans want us to throw a dollar in every time we say on the show? So go into our Twitter, at Taylor_Nick_L said juice. Sam, I know that's kind of a Willie Taggart term. I don't know about necessarily giving it the full ban. How do you feel?
This is one of those ones that's difficult to give the full ban just because sometimes coaches use it, sometimes players use it. So maybe if you're quoting somebody, it's something you might need to use. I definitely do think at times that it's one that we can accidentally use a little bit too much here on the show. So I can definitely see maybe tapering it back a little bit.
Yeah, I think if we're going to ban any Willie Taggart terms around here, I think it's going to be buckle up. I think that can go. We'll officially put that on the docs for 2021. If you guys hear it, let us know in the comments. Let us know in the replies on Twitter. We will throw a dollar in for you if you catch us slip enough, but we're going to try and catch ourselves. So mark it on the list for next year, 2021. We'll not be saying buckle up. Now, how about that for compromise, Sam?
Hey, I mean, it's better than nothing right there. I mean, I can think of a couple more that we need to add to that list, but that's a good start.
Hey, go ahead, man. What is your suggestion?
Well, I know that there's one word that we both use a little bit too much, and it's the word absolutely. It's our favorite word after, well, the other one makes a good point. We like to say absolutely, absolutely, way too much. Absolutely is a word that we need to put in that swear jar, and I'm saying it as many times as I can right here because I'm absolutely done saying absolutely on this absolutely great show.
Correct. Yeah, I think every time I do go back and listen, I absolutely hear us say that too much. And I don't know, our fans haven't complained about it yet, but yeah, we can definitely add that to this. Mark it down. I like it. Moving on, at Dad's Thoughts 1 says Stan. I don't know that we use that too much here. I am all for giving it the ban, because if we ever start using it excessively, you know, I don't think we have duck stands. It's not Duck Nation. We are a duck family. We are a flock. Not a big fan of the word Stan in the first place. How do you feel, Sam?
Well, Nick, for somebody who's not a big fan of it, you sure do have it in your Twitter bio. I just want to point that out really quick.
Well, you know, I mean, that was something I was throwing out there but the Kraken aren't even an official team yet. We haven't even seen them put anything down on the ice yet. So until then, that's subject to change, clearly. And if the fans want that to change, I'll listen to them on that. So, but I don't think Twitter bios are going to be going into the swear jar. And if they are, I'm going to owe a whole lot of money.
Well, it's not just the Twitter bios. I mean, I can definitely understand that people are kind of getting sick of that term by now. I'm not sure that it's one that we use enough to necessarily need to put the ban on it, but I'm sure that it's one that if we do start using it too much, we'll realize it pretty quick.
Okay, well, we got two more that we'll contemplate from Twitter. At Dr. Choi says, Chip. Now, this one is really, really tough because I don't know how I'm going to talk about my own personal experiences. I could say Coach Kelly for sure. It just slips for me. Chip, is that an animosity thing? Are Ducks fans not wanting to talk about him anymore, move past the Chip Kelly era, or is it something else?
I think it's just one of those things. I think it might just be that we do reference that era so much on this show. It's something that we do continually go back to. Maybe they're just saying, hey, maybe we should explore some other eras of Duck football a little bit. But that being said, I don't think you can tell the story of Duck football without the word Chip in it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think not something that is quite swear jar worthy, but something we'll consider that we do talk. We'll bring in players from other eras for sure, and be very mindful of that, especially as we go into basketball season. I don't think we'll be talking too much Chip. One more from at Carolina DNA. He says Vibin. I also don't use vibing too much. I mean, that maybe that's what all the hip young kids, you guys, you know, that maybe that's what you guys are using. Maybe that's shway. But I don't use vibing too much. I don't care one way or the other if it goes in the swear jar. What do you think, Sam?
I mean, maybe we have used the term vibing before on the show. I'm not super, super positive. We totally could have, and I just don't remember it. That's more than a possibility. But, you know, we can put it on there if we want to, vibing. It's not something that I imagine we use too much as it is, but if we want to, we can.
Yeah. So, anyways, we'll go ahead and we'll take some of these and we'll get an official set list, which we'll definitely post out there on Twitter for all of you. Make sure you're following along and subscribed on YouTube, SoundCloud, Apple Podcasts, anywhere you get your podcasts. Make sure you're tuned in because 2021 is going to be a big year for us. 2020 has really been fantastic, to be honest. And nothing really showed us more than some of the gifts that we got from our fans out there. I wanted to just say a big thank you to at Scorigan Ducks for giving me something to really remember the Huskies backing out of the game this year. We have the Bi-Mart button, rough up the Huskies, if you can see that. And I'm always going to remember that up here. Went up to Husky Stadium to see how they were doing in the bunker and check up on them on my birthday. And, you know, well worth it. Well worth it. But anyways, moving on. One more great gift. And I got to thank Rika for getting me this fantastic, as you can see, Seattle's best fast food establishment, Dick's. Big bag of dicks. You get a green and yellow Oregon scarf that I think goes really, really fantastic with this Pac-12 championship shirt, if I do say so myself. So thank you to all our fans, family, everyone that supports the show, loved ones, and especially former guests. I mean, they've been probably the most supportive, giving us, you know, the retweets and the follows. And man, we've had such a great season so far, and man, everything we have lined up just is going to keep that rolling. Sam, what are you most thankful for as we go from 2020 into 2021?
Well, obviously, first and foremost, I'm thankful that Oregon is the Pac-12 champion yet again. That's the most prominent thing to be thankful for, in my opinion. But after that, I'm thankful that we're still doing this show. I'm thankful that there is still Oregon athletics to be able to talk about. There was a chance just not too long ago when we thought that we might have the long, long sabbatical in between seeing our Ducks play and when they would be back out on the field, court, pitch, however you want to say it again. But we got it.
Yeah,
Oregon, I mean, Ducks.
Oh, crazy. Crazy to think about how long that hiatus we had for the show was, and hopefully we never have anything like that again. But I just remember so much once, particularly the women's basketball team. I mean, we had such high hopes because I think anyone really following that team knows that that was Oregon's shot of the national championship. And I fully believe, you know, not with just the win over the women's national team, but just the way that they're continuing to peak in the Pac-12 tournament, right when everything got canceled, I really believe these women were for the Oregon Ducks were ready and destined to be national champions before COVID hit and everything locked down. But hey, even with all the opt-outs, everything that's happened this football season, the two losses, which I know fans aren't happy about, I am so thankful for everything these players have given us in terms of sacrifices and going into this bowl game, man. I know what it is like for you to be there on campus when no one's there. And that's already tough enough just practicing for a bowl game that's happening right over New Year's or Christmas. And from the very first year I was there, I knew what that was like. And it's rough enough as is, but with all the COVID protocols and not even getting that 1 or 2 days to go see family, I am so thankful for this team just banding together. And I hope in the future that they're just going to grow from it, and this team moving into the 2021 season is going to take the six games that they've already been able to play in the regular Pac-12 season, and then the championship level that they'll be playing in the last two games. I hope this experience is something that carries over instead of just kind of being, you know, like a lot of fans are saying, you know, 2020, you know, who cares, you know, scrap it up, it doesn't mean a lot. But to me, I think we saw a lot of growth in this team in just the few games that they were able to play. And man, props to them for staying healthy for all those games and being able to put out a football team on the field every weekend.
Honestly, it's so surprising that things were able to go off honestly as well as they did. Oregon was able to play five of their six regular season games, which is probably more than a lot of teams got in the Pac-12, more than probably could have been expected. They're able to get in that Pac-12 championship game, and they're able to perform. They come out and perform sped every week. Of course, there's a couple of losses, but there were still aspects of the game in which Oregon played very well. The Ducks did their thing throughout the season. They did kind of what we expected them to. We said they'd be Pac-12 champs playing in a New Year's Six bowl game. Well, guess what? They're Pac-12 champs playing in a New Year's Six bowl game.
Yeah, and it didn't turn out any way we expected it, for sure. That USC game was wild. I mean, from the very get-go, at least they did a few of the things we had said they needed to do. We got turnovers. We protected the football pretty decently. And you know what? Man, that defense was fired up. Kayvon Thibodeau had the game of his season, even though not necessarily statistically. If you're watching the way he was demolishing USC's offensive line, wow, he's playing inspired and, you know, got one more game this season. And for some of these Ducks, it's going to be the last game of their career. You know, the Jordan Scott is one guy in particular. It's, you know, I want to send that guy off with a win. And, man, it's going to be a tough matchup with Iowa State from the Big 12. I think they match up with Oregon really, really well.
Well, Iowa State is a team that Oregon definitely needs to look out for. They're led, obviously, by their quarterback, Purdy. 2,594 yards in the season, along with 18 touchdowns and 9 interceptions. In the backfield next to him, they've got Hall, who is a monster. 1,436 yards this season. Also, guess how many fumbles he has in his career, Nick? I'll give you a hint. It's Oregon's logo.
Zero, man. I know that's been a big storyline going into the game, and I'm really excited to see if Andy Avalos takes that inspiration and applies it to the defense to say, hey, here's a guy who's being touted as, you know, this might be his last college game, and he has no fumbles. Let's go out and give him one. And his production in the past couple games has been declining. You can see he hasn't hit 100 yards in, I think, the past two games. And if Oregon could get a fumble, man, that would be really demoralizing to this Iowa State team, which would love nothing more than to come out in 2 and 3 tight end sets, run the ball in Oregon all day to set up their passing attack and everything that they do to set up their players in really, really good positions. I think if they've watched, you know, the six games they've seen of Oregon this year, they've got to be kind of licking their chops thinking we could probably run the ball on this team, establish the run and do a lot of the things that really Oregon does try to do in establishing a lead and really choking the life out of the other team. So I'm really excited to see the X's and O's and the stylistic matchups of this team, but even more so, I'm excited to see the comparison of, to me, the Big 12 in many years has been so overrated, particularly on defense. And you see these defenses that come out and, you know, they have to do things schematically to try and make up for and compensate for a lot of their major talented players being used on the offensive side of the ball, with the exception of a few schools. Iowa State's kind of one of those schools. This defense is really, really stacked, but that 3-3 scheme, you know, in the back end and bringing safeties up and trying to mix things up, I think that's something that reminds me a lot of Arizona in the Rich Rod years, of trying to just mix things up when you don't necessarily have the same athletes on the field as your opponents. And we'll see if Oregon's offensive line can gel and come together, which we, you know, I don't think we've seen them do for a full four quarters this season. I'm really confident, but Iowa State could present a lot of problems for this team too.
I think Oregon's going to be able to score points in this game. I don't think that's super up in the air. I think what's going to be up in the air is whether or not Oregon can stop Iowa State by any means. I think one of the biggest keys to this ball game, and it's something we'll get into more later, but Oregon has to be able to make tackles in the backfield. They absolutely have to be able to finish. So many times we've seen arm tackles missed in the backfield. Guys just aren't quite able to get off their block. That's something that absolutely is going to have to happen against Iowa State. You mentioned they're the kind of team that likes to establish the run, then get into the throw a little bit. If Oregon can shut down the run, force Purdy to throw, they can force him into some mistakes. He's got a 2-to-1 touchdown interception ratio. That means he's probably more than likely to give you one. You have to be in a position to get it. You have to force him to make a bad decision, but it's all possible if Oregon can stop the run.
Well, that, and, you know, Oregon's defensive backs right now, you know, they seem to be lurking for the football. They're begging for turnovers. Hill getting the 2 interceptions in the last game. You know, Lenore playing fantastic, and Wright not getting enough credit for the way he's been playing, particularly. The defense really stepped it up against USC, and a lot of that wasn't just Kayvon and up front, but, you know, the back end there was covering USC fantastically. So those guys definitely don't get enough credit, and we're going to see if they can match up with Iowa State, or more so if Iowa State can match up with them. I think that's going to be very interesting. And in terms of offense, I think it's going to be more of the same. We need to just see ball security. The team needs to take care of the football and execute. And I think with everything we've seen from Moorhead's offense this year, they have the creativity, they have the design. It's more of execution and being able to make the reads on a quick basis. And, you know, when you're going against a team, particularly from a different conference, you know, maybe their game speed might feel a little bit different. So it could take a couple drives to see Oregon's offense get into a rhythm, particularly with how long these teams have to scheme for each other. I've always found that very, very interesting, going back to, instead of having a life manual this week, Sam, I'm going back to our Beat the Buckeye, my first BCS Bowl, when we went to the Rose Bowl to play the Ohio State Buckeyes. I felt like a lot of that game, we had over-schemed so much going in that we had O-line tip sheets, we had O-line tests going through here. We had every single play formation-wise that we ran that we saw different Big Ten teams run against Ohio State. And the thing was, we went in that game thinking so much, and then you got out there against Ohio State and their athletes hit you in the mouth. And there wasn't a whole lot of thinking, you know, it was the old Mike Tyson quote, everybody has a plan until you get hit. And we got hit in the mouth. We took it. We played that game tough, but I remember learning very specifically going into the national championship game. And more importantly, the second time we went to that Rose Bowl, man, that was such a big lesson of how you can use that bowl prep time to work on yourselves or to just work way too hard on thinking about your opponent. And so that's a huge balance that's very, very tough to strike in these critical couple weeks between the Pac-12 championship and this bowl game.
Well, I wanted to ask you, Nick, there is an abbreviated time between the Pac-12 championship game and the bowl game, especially like what's normal with a conference champion. a lot of the time what's able to happen is coaches are able to not just work on their own team, but get a look at some of the younger guys, be able to scheme a little bit for future opponents. There's a lot of work that can usually get done during that bowl prep time. With such an abbreviated schedule, how do you see that changing this season?
Well, you know, if you think about it, this year there's going to be even more time because the team, you know, doesn't have anything to go in terms of extracurricular activities or going home to visit family. Everything they can do can be structured around kind of team time. And right now, you know, it's probably the very safest thing for the team and for everybody in the athletic staff and coaching staff there. So it's really critical for them to, you know, they have to maintain COVID protocols among all this, which I can't imagine in my time, you know, waiting around for a bowl game because, you know, Eugene, as you know, as soon as everyone gets out of there for finals, it's dead. And particularly in the winter when it's cold and a lot of students don't have a car and stuff, man, it can be a real bummer. It can be really, really depressing without any people around. So I really feel for the team and more so you have so much time to just sit there and prep. So it was almost like having an extra spring ball for those really late BCS games for us. It was like, you know, you had 2 weeks where a lot of the rotation was going to be younger guys. You were going to get older vets to heal up, you know, kind of take some time off, let some injuries heal, and then get back into a rhythm of game week, you know, two weeks about before the game was going to be played. And then actual game week, they're going full speed and implementing guys back in I can't imagine what it would be like right now because the entire team, it's an opportunity to get better for sure. But as you can see in the Pac-12, their teams have just opted to say, hey, I'm cool with the season being over. I want to go home, start working on whatever's next for those guys that are seniors and moving on to potential NFL careers or, you know, professional careers. It's crazy to me to think that the Oregon team is stuck in there and, you know, if it were for a playoff for sure, I can understand. But the Fiesta Bowl, I mean, I'm real proud of these guys for getting there, particularly when we saw in this season, after two losses, things looked really bleak. And going into what was supposed to be a showdown with Washington for the Pac-12 North, you know, everything was on the line for Oregon there. And to see things turn up how they have and see the team stick in there and ride it through, couldn't be more proud to be a Duck.
Well, Nick, we're going to get to our keys to the game and our predictions at the end of the show. For now, though, I've got another question for you, and it has to do with all of this. You yourself, you played in several bowl games, a few BCS bowl games, and, well, one you didn't play in, but we're going to get to that a little bit later. One of the things that I'm wondering is tell me about each of those bowl games from that redshirt season Holiday Bowl up through the 2012, Rose Bowl, and from a question that we got on Twitter from @WookieDo, what are some of the best free things, some of the best free swag you've gotten from bowl appearances?
Oh, man. So this is going to make me feel real old because it was back, you know, the team this year is getting PS5s. And back in my day, you could get a couple points here to get a PS3 or an Xbox 360. Which, you know, back then were not like hot shelf items necessarily. But, you know, when I was in high school was when those were released. So, that makes me feel dated for sure. I know in terms of gaming, the consoles came a lot faster than I think people were ready for. But that's one of those things is you get into bowl season. There's a lot of people that like to say, oh, this is where if you've earned it. You know, back in the day, it was get to 6 wins. You earned your bowl game. You get bowl gifts, depending on what bowl you're in. And I was very, very lucky getting to start with the Holiday Bowl as a red shirt. We got the option. You could get a bowl ring or a $300 Best Buy gift card. Man, since I was red shirt and I knew I wasn't playing in that Holiday Bowl, oh, I spent that gift card on everything that was in my dorm room for that winter term and moving on until I got out of the dorm. So well worth it. And I think there's a couple other little minor bowl gifts with the Holiday Bowl that were cute, nice, but that next year when we got to the Rose Bowl, you definitely saw what a step up those BCS games were. And I wasn't sure if it was that year or the next year when we went to the Tostitos National Championship, which they had on the Fiesta Bowl site. But they converted to a point system for BCS games where they said, hey, every player gets, you know, 10 points to spend on items. Here's a 10 point item. You know, that would be a big chair or a really nice, you know, now it'd be a PS5, obviously. Whatever the top tier item was would be, your entire allotment of points. And for me, that first Rose Bowl season, I got a Rose Bowl keyboard, a couple little knickknacks here and there, and particularly this Samsung camera, which I still have, and it looks really, really small in my hands. It's pretty small. It's not that bad. The battery life is now about 5 minutes on this thing, but still uses memory cards, and it got me through a lot of extra B-roll I needed to get in journalism school. So when I couldn't check out a camera down there at a night library or Allen Hall, I was able to go ahead and pull that thing out and fill in the little extras here and there with stuff just to make projects work. So that was the first Rose Bowl national championship year. I ended up getting a bicycle. And as anyone that is a University of Oregon alumni that's lived in Eugene knows, bicycle is a very tricky thing. And if you're not going to sleep with that bicycle in your bed or have 6 chain locks and 2 U-locks on it, you are probably going to lose that thing if you keep it out overnight. And unfortunately, I did. I had spent an entire, I think, 2 or 3 months during that winter conditioning riding my bike to and from conditioning every day, and some of the best shape I'd been in my life. I'd actually broken the pedals off the initial bike, had to replace them with steel titanium pedals. And then that one morning you just wake up and it's gone. That's the bowl gift that got away from me, Sam. So that one I mentioned to Wookie Doo on Twitter, that's the one I remember most of. Man, that was such a really good bike too. I'll have to find some pictures and post that here when we post this episode, but miss that bike, man. If anybody sees the guy that stole that in Eugene, you beat him up for me. But then, you know, the Rose Bowl got a second Rose Bowl appearance, got a nice watch, and I believe a 19-inch TV with built-in DVD player, something like that. It all gets mixed in there. But what I do remember is the Fiesta Bowl, which I was supposed to attend. I'd selected a big recliner and a part of, if you're not academically eligible, yeah, you don't get the bowl gifts. So pretty bummed. It was a really nice recliner too. I know Rob Beard, previous guest of the show, I ended up getting one of those, and I remember being really jealous. I was probably a little big for it at the time, but I would have slimmed down into it.
Well, Nick, you definitely through the years got your fair share of bowl gifts, that's for sure. Something that I think, well, some of the people that listen to us for the sake of loving it and some of us people who listen to us for the sake of hating it, they're probably curious about that academically ineligible Fiesta Bowl. Of course, if you don't want to, you don't have to get too far into it, but I'm sure we'd appreciate a little breakdown of what happened.
No, man, I said I'd talk about it, and it doesn't bother me at all. I think a lot of people do, particularly, you know, when you Google me or try to look me up in my career, that's one of the last things that you know, the press release that came out about me not being eligible for the Fiesta Bowl with Axel McCaw. And, you know, it's funny the things people do try to equate that to. And anybody that's been in a college course understands how easy it is to just, hey, if you just decide not to go, who cares? But in my situation that year, it was a whole lot more than that. And I cared a lot. I was just in a situation where, I was pretty much done going to a couple of those classes. And the season was very, very tough for me. So going into the 2012 season, coming off an ankle injury in the Oregon State game that carried in the Pac-12 championship and in the Rose Bowl, I'd rehabbed that off season and come in really thinking, I was ready to move inside to guard and start at guard all season. And sometime in, I think it was the second week of our fall camp that season, I had someone spin inside on me and I took a shot in the knee that just didn't feel right. And, you know, I tried to play through it, tried to never miss a thing, but through the season, it just started to wear down. Now I go back and I watch that tape now and I'm like, well, something wasn't right. And what's funny is, You know, I'll talk about it a little later. But when I get to the CFL, and they, you know, they're doing my my measurements and having me go through all the tests with the doctors, they're going through and doing my physical, and they check my knee and go, "Well, when did you tear your patella tendon?" And I said, "I've never torn my patella tendon." And said, "Well, it looks like you've had at least a minor tear of your patella tendon." I thought my senior year I'd had a patella bruise. We'd had it MRI'd, I think, even. So some point there, it was just wrong. But I remember Greatwood pulling me aside 6 games into the season. My last start was against UW. And as we talked about with Weems and Asper, Wood was a hard guy. So to see him express a softer side and handle something like that in a soft way was even harder. I would have actually preferred him just chew me out, tell me I sucked, or, you know, I wasn't doing good enough. But he came up to me after practice. It was a Monday, and he said, "You know, no one should have to lose their job because of injury. And right now you're just not performing to the level that we think we need for the team." So, you know, I still wanted to grind and fight so hard, tooth and nail, to get that back. And it's going into Colorado the next week. Monogray got the start. And in that game, I think it was a torn ACL or something. I remember he had a season-ending injury, and just thinking to myself, well, number one, I could have been out there. That could have been me. And I wasn't ready for, you know, something like that. I was already in bad enough shape if you go back and watch that season. But, man, from there, I thought I had an opportunity to get my job back. And I had no rational idea of how bad, like, that would have been for me if I really did. And from there, Kyle Long came in, and, man, what a beast. You know, everyone knows, goes on to play for the – get drafted by and play for the Bears in a Pro Bowl career. And, you know, fantastic dude. But, man, I just remember I kept looking out there on the field and thinking, I wish I was at full ability to help my team. And so that season, I had taken a lot of classes as filler, as being a fifth-year guy. I had no more. All my J-school credits were done. I had one math course I was saving for the spring. Nothing I had to take was in terms of my actual requirements. So where a lot of people would take, like billiards or fun classes like that, a lot of the stuff that interests me were personally like music, like, and I'm not going to be able to have the time to take a music class or a computer programming class. So for me, I took a 100 level Eastern Civilizations class in history. And the other class, I ended up dropping one of my three classes, and the two classes I left with were Eastern Civilizations and a 300 level sound and science course, which I say I probably was able to only like understand about 20% what was happening in that class before that 6 week happened. And from then I started going to class week 7, week 8, and those guys that, you know, those underclassmen that wanted to be your friends because, you know, you're a starting football player, you know, guys start asking you questions about when you're walking in with ice strapped up to all your joints. And it was really, really uncomfortable to walk into class, particularly a noon class, you know, coming out to practice, just ice strapped up on both shoulders, both knees. And it was a really bad choice on my part. And I look back more than anything, and I'm like, people that want to clown on me for that, I'm like, that's fine. I know. But there's nothing harder than for me when that Stanford week happened, because I had a lot going on in my personal life. The girl I was dating at the time had a DUI. Family was going through some stuff, and the week of the Stanford game, I was moping around a lot, and Coach Greatwood personally came up to me after it was a dinner on a Tuesday, and he thought I was sulking around because of losing my starting job. And he didn't understand that it was a whole lot more than that, and I wasn't that selfish of a person. And he chewed me out so hard, which I wish he would have done when I lost the job, because I think it would have – that was the place for it. But then and there, killed me. The next morning, Wednesday Stanford practice, you know, our last chance to really get physical. We're a little late from our lifting session to the O-line meeting, and Coach Wood just decides he's going to run us you know, our first 15 minutes of pre-practice instead of watching any film. So we get out there early, we strap up, and we're doing 100-yard shuttles, and then we had to roll. And I just remember being so frustrated. And you know, I hoped it wasn't because of my attitude. And I remember particularly, we get to the end there, and Hronas Kwasu struggling to roll because he's injured at that point in the season. A lot of us are banged up. And I went back and I rolled another 40 yards with him just because I thought, man, I hope this isn't my fault. But if it is, I'm going to earn it. And I remember as soon as we lost that game, I was broken. I don't think I went back to another single class that term. And a lot of that game I put on myself. I don't talk about that a lot. You know, we've talked about the game plenty on the show, but a lot of that game I put on myself for not being ready and not being my full 100% self and trying so hard to get back in there. And, you know, in Arizona State earlier that season, you know, I went down with an injury that, you know, looking back, it just, I stepped the wrong way and my knee just gives out. And then I feel like silly when they come out, check on me on the field, and I couldn't stand up after about 30 seconds. But, you know, there's a time there where I couldn't understand what was going on in my body, and I wasn't spending enough time listening to it. So I wanted so badly after coming off that Rose Bowl win to be in the national title game that when we lost Stanford, man, a Fiesta Bowl, I'd been there, done that. We were going to be at the same hotel, the same area, Glendale. Nothing to it for me, man. We should have been in that national title that year against Alabama, Notre Dame. I don't care. That team deserved it. And once we weren't, for me, and selfishly, unfortunately, looking back, I kind of decided I needed to start focusing on myself. And I still remember my last practice was with the practice squad when I'm like, I know I'm not going to play. I know I'm not going to go down there and contribute. And just had to grind it out, man. That's the toughest thing. So anything anybody says or questions that they have about that, nothing's harder than the days I already went through dealing with that and then understanding like how I got there. And even more so, the perspective I have today, I can get through anything. I know that, you know, there are tough times ahead. And 2020 particularly has been a big test for a lot of those things. But through it, I know I'm going to be fine. I know I'm going to always be able to plan out ahead what's best for me. And, you know, there's going to be times sometimes where I question that. And I definitely did. But looking back, you know, had a great, fantastic college career. I don't have any regrets besides what I probably should have been doing in terms of selecting college classes that I actually could really attain during that season when a lot of unpredictable things happened. So, hey, man, you know, once a duck, always a duck. So glad to be where I am today and everything I've learned from it. And still, to this day, I am so blessed for my last bowl game to have been this baby. I mean, regardless of the Fiesta Bowl, that Rose Bowl, man, that team, Weems, Asper, those guys, you know, that was special. And the team had outgrown me by the time I was a senior. You could see with Marcus Mariota and all those young guys coming up that the talent, particularly in the offensive line room, was going to be ascending anything that I could physically achieve, and was really more proud of that than anything. And, you know, going into the Fiesta Bowl game, I remember sitting there nervously thinking, man, I hope there's no crazy way, you know, two guys go down and they would have really needed me on the offensive line. But as soon as the ball kicks off, all that's alleviated. Didn't have to worry about it. I knew that the Ducks were going to be just fine without me. And I knew that watching my first game as a fan, it was like there was a weight lifted because that little waiting time in between, you know, not having a team and not being able. I tried to go down to the bowl game and then just decided, you know, if I'm going to try and go pro, I have to save up this money and do what I can to try and train now. So I ended up, you know, not even going down and, you know, had a buddy on the team hold tickets for me. Thanks, Hoff. Shout out. But yeah, I remember so much that as soon as that kickoff happened, man, D'Anthony takes it back. The excitement of being a fan for the first time got to hit me. And it took me a while to embrace that. There was a couple years there where it was really hard for me, but at least like I knew that game was in hand from the very first kickoff. And that season was still really special to me. And I learned so much more from that than probably any other season.
Well, Nick, after all that, I'm glad you're here. Glad you're here talking with me. And I'm really glad that our guest is here as well because, well, you just mentioned him. He did put all of our minds at ease pretty quickly in that game. It took him about 13 seconds. But boy, after that 13 seconds, we were all seeing the world quite a bit differently.
Yeah, I think Kansas State was too, right? With us now is the man that really kicked off that 2013 Fiesta Bowl and left a lot of Kansas State fans speechless. DeAnthony Thomas, the Black Mamba on the football field. How have you been, my man?
I'm doing great. I've been doing great.
Man, thank you for coming on with us. And I mean, first and foremost, I'm sure you've been asked it before, but when you have a big kick return, particularly like in that Fiesta Bowl, when is that moment you first know, like, I'm gone, I'm going to be going all the way to the end zone, and I got to think about my celebration already?
To be honest, you don't even know. It just happened. It just happened, and I feel like it happens in practice. You know how it is in practice where, you know, we just work hard and things just come natural, you know, in the game. And, you know the film, it shows, and it's just unbelievable how just hard we used to work and just be there for one another.
Man, DeAnthony, you had such an interesting background that I found like so cool when I was researching it, from playing on the Snoop Dogg team to making the decision to come up to Oregon. I guess I'm kind of wondering, looking back on young DeAnthony Thomas, what words would you have for him? And then what went into that decision to leave California and become the dude at Oregon?
Man, it feels unbelievable now that I'm 27 years old, about to be 28, you know, January 5th. So, and now that I just look back on all the things, you know, I just had to sacrifice and, you know, understand to be disciplined about. And I just pat myself on the back for just understanding the process and sticking to it and just never giving up and just understanding myself and believing in myself to, you know, just overcome things and break the cycle.
Yeah. And when you talk about breaking that cycle, it's really interesting because when I came into the Oregon program, there was definitely this perception of you come in as a freshman, you have to take your lumps, you have to sit on the bench for a year. But two guys I remember that completely broke that mold were you and Cliff Harris, just coming in as instantaneous freshmen that had an impact on the field right away. What it was like to come into a college program that's already, you know, competing for national championships, and what's it like to come in as a freshman with those expectations already on your shoulders?
It's super motivating, and it's very exciting just to be a part of a group of, you know, individuals that's there to just, you know, make a name for themselves. And it's crazy because everybody's coming from different, you know, states and different cities. And it's all about, you know, getting to know each other and competing and also making each other better. So I feel like that's what we all did at that time. We just competed and made each other better. And, you know, and we took practice serious. And I feel like that's what separated us from a lot of, you know, programs. We took practice serious and, you know, we took other, you know, events serious where it was more than, you know, just football. It was more like the mental and the recovery part. So we took all those, you know, those obstacles that came, you know, towards us that our coaches put in front of us. And, you know, we stayed disciplined and we believed in them. We understood, you know, what they wanted to do for us. And we just took that moment and took that time to, you know, we took advantage of it. And I feel like it feels good to just know that process and that, and all that grind and that effort and all that, you know, that discipline, and it's paying off. And just as a young man, and just being able to just see that and just be disciplined, and just it just helping me create other things in life now, where just, you know, I got into fishing, where I'm creating my own fishing apparel line, and then, you know, I got my own brand, DatMamba.com, that's just, you know, taking off, and everything is just coming in a flow. And, you know, the Duck Store is reaching out to me, and now I'm gonna be getting my merch in a Duck Store soon. So, you know, a lot of things is just opening up, and I'm just, you know, just staying just creative and, you know, humble about all the things that's coming towards me. And this is just the beginning of, you know, my life story and how I just want to just keep creating, keep building, keep motivating, you know, people that just come from, you know, just nothing. And a lot of people, and, you know, a lot of people, you know, come from different backgrounds, but that's not even the point. The point is, you know, participating, finding what you love, and sticking to it. And once you, you know, figure that out, you know, never give up on it. And, you know, there's going to be things that try to interfere in your process, but that's when you have to just maneuver through those things and just keep grinding towards whatever you want to get, whatever you want to accomplish.
Man, D'Anthony, you accomplished so much. Personally, one thing that I think back on is that freshman season of yours. You come out in that game against LSU. It's tough. There's a couple of fumbles. That's a tough game that y'all end up taking an L in. But after that, you move forward throughout the season. You end up having a huge appearance in the Rose Bowl. You win that ball game. You've got two of the most electrifying plays in Rose Bowl history. Talk about the personal growth you felt as well as the team felt throughout that season.
To be honest, at that time, you know, my life was moving so fast, and I really didn't even understand all that stuff. I just knew that I just had to, you know, participate, you know, when it was time for me to, you know, show up to class or, you know, participate in the Jaquil or just participate whenever it was times where, you know, it was needed. And I feel like I fulfilled those things, and that's what helped me, you know, catapult myself in all the other obstacles that just came my way. And like I said, I say discipline to all those things, and it helped me. It made my transition a lot easier than I thought.
Yeah, definitely. And that transition was huge because, I mean, I'm telling you, without you on that team, that was a huge element going into that season. You know, you and I shared our first home start in Autzen, that Nevada game that it just felt like everything started clicking and we started seeing what that offense could possibly be. You know, what was it like, you know, not just as a player or a running back at Oregon, but, you know, what was it like coming as being one of the first five-star recruits, particularly to Chip's system, to come in and see what had already been established and try and make yourself mesh? Who are the athletes you were kind of molding yourself towards that gave you a lot of the traction to be able to come in and really establish yourself as a freshman right away?
Like I said, at that time, I really didn't really understand all that, you know, I guess, I don't even know what to call it. I really didn't understand it. I just knew my mission. I knew what it took every day to, you know, just be consistent and help, you know, just motivate everybody, you know, want to do better. I feel like that was my position on the team, to motivate people, to encourage people, you know, every day, to, you know, just have some type of smile to, you know, come in, even if it's coming into the Jake, we're having a smile to come walking up the stairs and just bringing some kind of energy where it's like making everybody feel good and, you know, positive and creative. And I feel like when you bring that spirit, it makes everybody want to work hard and just bring that same energy and effort.
D'Anthony, your sophomore season, you played in the exact same bowl game the Ducks are getting ready to play in right now, that Fiesta Bowl. We already mentioned that opening kickoff. You also had the first offensive touchdown in that ball game as well. Is there anything you remember from that game in particular that just sticks out to you that you hope the Ducks carry with them heading into the game this weekend?
To be honest, not really. It was all about just I feel like when we first, you know, showed up to our hotel, and it was just something about the scenery that just, it was just different. So I just feel like we had to take a different approach to practice, how we carried ourselves, you know, on site, you know, within, you know, because we stayed in a nice place. So I feel like we had to carry ourselves very professional. And, you know, even when we went out to different places, we had to be professional. Even when we went to practice, we had to be professional. And I feel like it showed in the game. And, you know, when you do stuff like that, it carries on. And I feel like it just brings energy. And when you bring energy, it's unstoppable.
Yeah. And talking about, you know, moving on and being professional, particularly where you're at this year, even though you opted out, it's been really, really fun. Some of my favorite memories of you already in the NFL, you there running with Tyreek Hill there for high-fiving, going to track meet there to the end zone, just showing off that highlight speed. But, you know, how has it been this season in 2020, particularly with your opt out? And what have you been doing to kind of get yourself ready for the 2021 season?
Man, I've just been building my mental. I feel like mentally, the game is all about being mentally strong and mentally prepared. So I'm just been preparing myself mentally. And I feel like that's going to take me a long way, you know, in the next few years, because it's all about, you know, just strategizing and carrying yourself as a professional at this point. So, and I feel like, you know, I'm going on my 7th year and, you know, time is flying. So, and now it's all about just carrying myself in a professional way and just bring a different style to me. Cause a lot of people see me when I was younger, but now I'm not older. And, you know, I just feel like I have a different way how I carry myself. And, you know, this is my time just to express the older me. And that's what I love. And I'm just waiting to express that time, and I'm just being patient, you know, and I feel like my time is going to come. I'm not going to rush nothing. And when that time do come, and I just want to be very presentable and, you know, and just express how I feel and just enjoy the moment.
D'Anthony, before we started recording, you were talking about that you were kind of in creativity mode right now. You were talking about the hoodie you were wearing, the fishing line you've been working on. What does creative mode look like for D'Anthony Thomas? What are you out there working on right now that you want people to know about?
Man, to be honest, created multiple revenue streams. You know, always, you know, Shaquille O'Neal, he always, I read somewhere, he was like, you know, I'm going to put this football, this NBA money aside, and I'm going to live off these marketing opportunities. I'm going to live off these.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have lost D'Anthony Thomas.
Ooh. Well, and as fast as he scored, he was gone. How about that, Sam? Wow. Love D'Anthony, but we gotta get a better connection next time.
You know what? If there was ever going to be a time for technical difficulties, it would be the last episode of 2020. Technically, the first episode of 2021, so go off on the right foot, I'll tell you that much.
You are absolutely right, Sam. I'm going to go ahead and do my duties of putting the first dollar in the swear jar for the Once a Duck podcast of 2021. It is official. Thank you all for joining us. Man, we've got one more thing to talk about before we wrap up our last episode of this season and start talking about basketball season. That is, Sam, what is your prediction for Oregon's Fiesta Bowl game against the Iowa State Cyclones?
Well, you know what? I think Purdy's going to be able to throw the ball a little bit. I think Hall's going to be able to run it. Iowa State's scoring points. They're going to put up 28. I just happen to trust Oregon's offense just a little bit more right now. The Cattleman's back there swinging the leg. So you know what? Oregon is going to win this one 34-28. Just as many touchdowns as the Cyclones, but the Cattleman is the difference.
Yeah, I could see that very, very likely being the case. Yeah. My opinion, I think we've seen this Oregon team win a couple close bowl games under Mario Cristobal, you know, getting thrown in that first Vegas Bowl situation. I'm not going to count, but I think in the Red Box Bowl and in the Rose Bowl, we saw a team that was really prepared, go out and play a really close game that they were ready to take over late in that game. And I think might be more of the same. I think this is going to be close all the way through. One of my minor side predictions is going to be, because all of this hype around no fumbles for Hall, I bet Oregon gets his first collegiate fumble. And not only that, I'm going to bank that the announcers probably jinx it by saying something about his fumble record right before it happens. And I bet like Tony Washington style Jameis Winston, it goes back to the house. I'm calling it now, Sam. The Ducks win this game 24-14. And you're right. The Cattlemen is going to be swinging strong. The Ducks are going to finish out this season strong with not only that back-to-back Pac-12 championship, baby, but a Fiesta Bowl win. And you know what? It's going to feel great. We're going to look back on it. We're going to be really, really thankful for all these moments. And man, especially all these fantastic episodes and guests we've had on Once a Duck for this 2020 year.
You know what? It's been such a fun year, but there's so much more still to go. I'm excited for what we have ahead of us. Nick, I'll let you wrap it up. But man, there's just so much more to come. Cannot wait to react to this game. Cannot wait to sit down and watch it with all these other Duck fans that I know that will be on Saturday, 1 p.m. ESPN, Ducks versus Cyclones. Nick, take us out.
Hey, everyone that's followed us, been with us, or is just joining us now, thank you for being here from, you know, Jordan Kent, now the voice of the Blazers, on down to Mark Asper, Darian Weems, you know, Rob Mosley. Wow. Just DeAnthony Thomas. Can you just believe the guests we've had on this season? Neil Everett. If you haven't checked out all these, they're going to be coming to you in individual interviews on YouTube. So be subscribed. We're going to bring them back to you. If you aren't watching our episodes all the way through, we're going to give those to you. So follow us, Instagram, Twitter, SoundCloud. Just look up Once a Duck Podcast on Google, Bing, wherever you're doing your searches. Find us, subscribe, and share with your friends, because once a duck, always a duck. Thank you for joining us. Hey, good riddance 2020 and 2021. Man, I'm excited to see what these Ducks do, baby. Go Duckies.